Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Terrance Toot Lee, 35 years of combination experience, Fire Chief of Beaver Lane Fire Rescue in Marshville, North Carolina, creator, owner, and operator of Premier Extrication. Toot didn't have that instant desire to become a firefighter. It took him several years to decide to apply with Beaver Lane. But once he got on, he did any and everything he could to be the best version of himself. Aspirations of going career was a goal Toot set, but in life everything we do and experience happens for a reason. Sometimes we don't have a choice, but an opportunity presented itself to Toot, he took it, and as the phrase goes, look what God did. If you know Toot, you know he's all in when it comes to extrication, and I truly hope the listeners can tune into some solid nuggets being dropped. With that, I present Terrance Toot Lee.
Hello, my name's Toot Lee. I've been in the fire service for 35 years. I started with Beaver Lane Fire and Rescue, and I'm still there today. I'm actually the fire chief. I've started out, obviously, as a firefighter, and I have moved up through the ranks from lieutenant to captain to assistant chief, and now, like I just said, fire chief. And I got started in the fire service, like I said, in 1990. I don't really know what kind of guided me that direction. I thought I wanted some different career paths before then, and but one day I got bit by the bug. I started to get interested in it. It took me several years before I actually went and applied at Beaver Lane, and I was lucky enough to be accepted, and here we are today. And it's been an awesome journey.
Okay. All right. So everyone that knows you, they know that you go by the name of Toot. So,
absolutely.
I do have to ask, because I've always wanted to know, where did that nickname come from?
Man, my brothers and sisters, they call me that. It was, I tell people I need to make up some kind of funny story, but you know, they started calling me that, and it's just stuck ever since they started. So one day I will make up something funny. It won't be the truth, but I'll make up something.
All right. So one thing I definitely didn't know. So you started as a volunteer with Beaver Lane, and you've never been any other place since.
No, I did work at part-time at Wesley Chapel for a few years. Okay. Grateful for that opportunity from Steve McClendon, and you never forget where you come from, but you know, I've always been at Beaver Lane, so I just wanted to see how some things were done different, because there's definitely nothing wrong with, you know, learning from outside of your organization. So
yeah.
But yes, that's the only place I've ever been.
Okay.
Outside of Chapel.
Okay. And so upon figuring out that the fire service is what you wanted to do, when you formally applied for Beaver Lane and you got accepted, was there anybody that you kind of guided to, or were, I don't want to use the word attracted, but did you kind of magnify yourself towards the individuals that you wanted to emulate?
I would say my first year, I kind of was just feeling my way through and making sure that was what I really wanted to do. I felt in my heart that it was, but you know, you still gotta put it in motion. And after my first year, maybe year and a half, I really realized that's what I wanted to do. And I just started bearing down, taking my fire classes and everything, got all my certification, and then started to get the real world knowledge of what the job was about, and not just, you know, from the certification side of it. And I'm trying to think of who I gravitated to. I don't really know off the top of my head. Just a several group of guys that I did. I have learned a tremendous amount throughout the year, but man, that's been so long ago. I kind of drawing a blank here.
No, that's fine. I get that. Okay.
And so once you got in, how long was it before you decided to start moving up the ranks?
Oh man, it was probably 10 to 15 years. It was something that was never, that's not what I was there for. I was there to be the best firefighter I could be. I tried to get on to other places and I never did. And I'm thankful that I didn't because God had a different path for me. So I'm very blessed from that side of it. But let me see. It was Harold James. He was the chief at that time. He's passed away several years ago, but he approached me about becoming a lieutenant, and I was like, man, that's not what I want to do, and I don't know about that. And I felt honored that Chief James asked me to come on board to be a lieutenant. I've not always been the easiest person to get along with, and I'm still that way today. So, but I was honored that he asked me, and that's where my officer side of things started to take place.
Okay. All right. You mentioned one thing that kind of resonates with me. It's the fact that like being an officer was truly never on your radar, but what you wanted to do was perfect the craft of being a backstep firefighter. So my question to you is, for anybody listening out there that's kind of on the fence, what's your advice to any individual that's like, should I or shouldn't I start climbing up the ranks?
Well, do it for the right reason and not just so you can have power. I see that a lot. People just want to have power and not really have the position for the right reason, regardless of his volunteer career or whatever. Make sure you're doing it for the right reason and mentor those folks that's coming up. And even people above you, I mean, we all can learn from each other. Just because you're the chief doesn't mean you can't learn from the rookie on the department. Always be a sponge to learn things. So I guess that would be the biggest thing. If that's what you decide you want to do it, make sure you're doing it for the right reason and not just to say, hey, I'm a lieutenant, I'm a captain, I'm a deputy chief or whatever it may be. Be a fireman's officer, so to speak.
Yes, sir. Okay. Love that advice. All right. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell the listeners a little about Beaver Lane, your stations, personnel, run volume? Doesn't have to be exact, but just give them an idea of what your department is.
Yeah, we just started full time a couple of years, well, year and a half ago. We're doing paid staff, part time folks, just like everybody else, and we still have some volunteers, not a lot. We do anywhere from 1,100 to 1,300 calls a year. That's the most we've ever run. Numbers are steadily climbing, but we do obviously the whole fire rescue medical side of things. Beaver Lane actually started out, the actual charter name is Beaver Lane Rescue and Fire because typically it's the fire service that absorbs the rescue squad. And this was way before my time. It was kind of flip-flop, you know, way back before my time. So.
Okay. And stations. One
One. We need
station.
two substations. We're working on that, but right now we're just one station. Sorry
Okay.
about that.
No, you're good. And who are you around? Like, what other departments are around you?
Our number one department that we run most of our mutual aid with is Wingate Fire Department right here at Wingate University, Allen's Crossroads. We do run some. Lanes Creek, and then of course New Salem. They're out toward our northern side, and then we run a little bit with Peachland and Anson County, and I think I said Lanes Creek, but that's the ones that we run most of our calls with right there.
Okay. And with it being 2025, did you ever imagine Beaver Lane having to go full time due to the fact of the shortage of volunteers that the whole fire service as a whole is seeing.
Obviously, when I started, I never did, but we did see the writing on the wall, so we wanted to try to get ahead of the curve. And it's just, everybody's fighting over the same people now and at this day and time. And it's basically firefighters are going from one fire job to the other. But yes, we did see that a long time ago that we were going to have to start to transition to that, because at the end of the day, you've got to get your calls covered. So we want to provide the best service we can to our customers, which are the citizens and whoever's passing through.
Okay. And so with like you said, with the writings being on the wall, what steps did you take to start implementing full time, and how many full time members do you currently have now?
Right now we have four. We're getting ready to start the hiring process for two more, so we can get the third shift covered. And ultimately, our goal was, once we get that done, obviously we will start to backfill to ultimately get to four people on each shift from that side. And we still have the part time, like I said, from that side, because part time comes in with our full-time guys, but we have one shift that has no full-time folks, but that should change pretty soon here.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming you guys are cross-staffing apparatus, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We are.
And what's the complement of apparatus in Station One?
We have three engines, aerial, but I really won't say that because it stays out of service more than it stays in service. So one tanker, brush truck, rescue, and then utility air trailer. So yeah, I said three engines. Yeah, three engines.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming most likely you're probably rotating engines every other day or every other week to get, so that way one's not being run more than the others.
Yeah, I mean, we have certain trucks that designated to first out on whatever type of call it is. So it's not like we're rotating weekly. It's just whichever call comes in, that's which piece of apparatus needs to go.
Okay. All right. And if I can ask, was the transition to having part-timers to full-timers difficult? Because, the fire service, one thing that the fire service doesn't like, they want change, but then again, they don't want change. So was it hard for certain members to like understand, hey, we're going to have full-time career members now and you will work alongside them?
Yes, it was. I feel like we're past that. And everybody's not going to always get along all the time, but it was difficult for some members. But at the end of the day, we got to make sure we have coverage, and I don't care what organization it is. So, at some point in time, you've got to. Now, I won't say at some point in time. You gotta always do what's right for the department, not what's all right, always right for two or whoever it may be. You gotta do what's right for the department, and you have to make some tough decisions. But if calls don't get answered, then you gotta deal with that from everybody. So you gotta make sure your calls are answered, and however we gotta arrive at that, that's what we'll do.
Okay, I love that answer. All right. In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Aggressive to me and I was meaning that my answer is more related to the fire side or the fire service side is coming off the truck prepared, fast walk, running. I've running with a purpose, not just running out of control, just being great at your job, knowing what's got to get done. I shouldn't have to tell you what line to pull or this, that, and the other. Just getting there and being a worker. Just, it's one thing to show up, but it's another thing to be that alpha dog, to be a worker where people see that you know what you're doing. They build that respect for you. And not, and when I say running, don't not anything reckless, so to speak. But what, like I said earlier, running, moving fast with a purpose. That's one of my, for me, that's what aggressive stands for in the fire service.
Okay.
Not careless actions. I
Right.
hope I'm making sense.
No, I got you. I got you. But you can also say that you could be an aggressive officer, or you could be an aggressive department at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. My mind, like when we roll up in whatever it is, every situation is hazard. We all know that. But most of the time, I'm in an offensive game plan until I see that we can't be offensive. I'm not, obviously the job is dangerous, but I'm not going to be reckless and send somebody in something that I know we shouldn't be up in there. But I go in with the offensive game plan. That starts my, that's what my process is as I'm starting. Once that tone drops and I'm starting my size ups when I'm around, I'm starting that size up as soon as the tone stop. I mean, the tones drop. So.
Okay. All right. And so I'm not sure the budget for Beaver Lane, but what kind of realistic training does Beaver Lane try to offer their members? Because not every department's burning something every day left and right. So while fires are down, what are some of the things that you and your officers are trying to bring to the department to benefit the members?
Well, we've had different folks actually come to our department, and we open that up from from engine op stuff, obviously some rescue stuff also, but we send our folks to different Carolina Fire Days. We send our folks to FDIC. We try to things that we see that are beneficial. We've sent them down to Chief Isaacs and some of his classes before. We actually have had him up here. 'Cause like I said earlier in the beginning, I think it's a great thing to go outside of the department to learn things and see things done differently from different folks all across the world. When especially when you go like the FDIC, you see so many, see and meet so many different people. There's a great training opportunity there, and our, like I said, some of our folks have the, we send them there and they bring that back to us, not just to go there and learn something and not share it with everybody. Unshared knowledge is wasted knowledge in my mind. So we do provide a lot of opportunities for people to go to different training classes.
Okay. All right.
I'll say some, I won't just say a lot, but some.
Right. Okay. Which some is better than none, and being closed-minded, like no, we're not bringing any outside ideas into our organization.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You mentioned outside training and having the willingness, even though your title is fire chief, that you are still a student, you can still learn things from others. Is it wild to see the shift of how the fire service is? Because I'm assuming back when you got on, it was do what you're told, listen with both ears, speak when spoken to, and if you had a question, you were kind of hesitant. But do you see the shift, and how do you feel about the newer generation that wants to know the why, not just because you said so, but that they genuinely want to know the history or the why behind whatever it is they're trying to learn?
Yes, I think overall we've been good with explaining things when the troops are out training with each other. We see and you're right, we do get asked the why questions, but I would rather have somebody to ask why instead of not answer ask the question at all, because somebody else may have that same question, and hey, somebody asked it, and because people are shy, everybody's not an alpha person, and it happens when we're training that we'll ask questions. Anybody got any questions? And then later on, we'll get pulled to the side. Well, I didn't want to ask this in front of everybody, but never be afraid to ask anything. But I think our guys and girls there, or ladies, I should say, I think they are good at that and trying to explain to each other. Obviously, we don't always see eye to eye when somebody tries to explain something, but overall, it still works out in the benefit for the organization.
Yes. Okay. Love that. Okay. With you being a leader now, which before I ask this question, leading up to it, how did the fire chief position come about? Like, obviously you worked your way through the ranks, but was that ever something that was on your mind? And when the opportunity presented itself, like what was your mindset like thinking about becoming fire chief, having that title?
I was approached about becoming the fire chief, and it was not something that I was interested in, like I originally said about the lieutenant position. But I was approached, 15, 16 years ago, whatever it's been, and the transition happened. I don't want to go into all the details, but the transition happened, and one of the biggest things that one of the first things I said to the organization. And I said, I want you folks to make 80 to 90, help make 80 to 90% of the decisions that are made here. I said, the 10 or 20% that I need to make a decision on, I'm not going to ask your opinion on it. And that's not being brashful or anything, but it's our organization. And I just don't think the fire chief should make every single decision. Let the troops have say so in the apparatus. They're the one that's riding the apparatus. Let them have, I don't want to say let them, make sure that they have say so in what equipment you're purchasing and whatever it may be. Obviously, we can't make all the decisions together, but I wanted to feel like more of our department instead of just one person's department. But to answer your question, I was approached with that, and here we are today.
All right.
And
With that.
it's not been an easy road. I mean, it's not it's it, people don't see eye to eye with me, and even today they don't see eye to eye, and I don't see eye to eye with everybody. But at the end of the day, you want to do make sure that we're doing what's best for the citizens, regardless of if we see eye to eye or not.
No, I can understand that. And that's one thing too, is career, volunteer, combination, whatever. You deal with a lot of things that most people don't know because, like, to me, a fire chief is not going to let others know, like, the bad parts. You know, as firemen, we only see the things we want to see, and we're blind to the daily emails and conversations and phone calls that fire chiefs have to take on, good or bad.
You're absolutely correct. It's daily from personnel, or when we have to deal with the town council, we have to deal with the county commissioners, the state officials. It's daily, and they don't, some way, shape, or form, it's some kind of daily email that or text or phone call that comes through that they have no clue, or even dealing with, your mutual aid chiefs and everything, because you obviously you want to have a great relationship with them. And once again, it's about solving the problem for whoever has the issue when the tones drop. But
Okay. All right. With that, now leading up to that question, leadership as a chief officer. So it's a two-part question. What kind of leader did you want to be, and what does leadership look like to you?
it's kind of like I said earlier. Obviously, I went in this as a in a chief in the chief role as an unknown, because obviously I'd never done it before. And once again, I wanted to, and I still want it to be a group effort. I just think we solve more problems by having a team concept. I know there has to be a leader. I understand that, regardless of what organization is, but I still believe in the team concept. Even when I had to make a decision, like that 10 or 20%, has that always went over well? No, that has ruffled some feathers when I made a decision like that. But at the end of the day, I still want our team to know that I have their back, even though we don't always see eye to eye with everything. I'm going to have our organization back 100%. Even when we're wrong, we're going to get behind doors. We'll discuss issues behind closed doors. You don't need to air everything out in the public, and you don't have a so-called public execution to rip somebody apart out in public. My younger days, I was hot-headed. I'm still hot-headed. I wouldn't take that away from in any way, shape, or form. I'm an open book. I'll shoot you straight, and I'll always be honest with you. And they ask questions: can we do this? Can we do that? The answer is not always yes, but if I say yes 100 times and I say no one time, don't blow up and be like, "Man, he never lets us do anything." You got to look at the whole big picture. Hey, we get to do a lot of things, and once again, you just want to feel like team and family, so to speak.
Okay. Love that. Love that answer. All right. When it comes to communication, I think one of the things that makes successful organizations great is communication. So, how important is it to have communication within all ranks of the department?
I think it's very important. We're going through some officer issues right now. I'm not, once again, I won't elaborate on all of that, but like I said, I'm honest. But it's very important to communicate with from the top to the bottom, and the board of directors. And I'll give a shout out to our board of directors. They do not try to micromanage day-to-day operations. They don't want anything to do with day-to-day operations. That's what we're here for. There's times I've talked to them and they were like, "Hey, that's y'all's job." And we have an outstanding board that supports us. And it's back to that team concept that everybody may not be on board at some certain time, but eventually it gets around. But then the communication is should be very open. I think at all times, obviously you can't tell everything all at one time, but don't keep people in the dark. Let them know what's going on, whether it's good or bad. Let them know what's going on, because if they don't know what's going on, somebody's going to figure out a way to assume they know what's going on, and it could be bad information. So you'd rather keep them in the front of the loop instead of at the back of things, and just let them know up front. And be truthful and move forward that way.
Okay. No, I 100% agree with that communication. And I'm assuming you have I don't want to say like an open door policy, but depending on what the situation or circumstance is, if any one of your members has an issue, they can come and talk to you. And I understand sometimes you need members to vent, but they can respectfully come and have a conversation with you, an open
Oh,
dialogue.
absolutely. Absolutely. I think at some point, people have put their narrative on me that some people have hesitated to talk to me because maybe I went off on something, but about something, but did you get the whole story of what set me off and not just the way somebody's narrative wanted it to be? Because I have had people that they were shy about coming to talk to me about different things, not just fire department stuff, and they did finally approach me and seen it was nothing like what they were led to believe. Once again, I will not tell anybody that. I get along with everybody, and I'm not just talking about our organization. I believe in right and right and wrong is wrong, I've made just as many mistakes as anybody, and I will continue to make some mistakes. I don't look at it as that's the one I'm going to add this in there. The one thing I see in the fire service, my job allows me to go a lot of different places, and the one thing I've seen in the fire service, and if I think if people are honest with each other, they would agree with this, that sometimes if we see somebody struggling to do something, if we're whatever it may be, we're quick to blast them about, hey, look at this guy, look at this lady over here. They can't do this, they can't do that. Instead of us getting down there helping them and trying to make them better, sometimes it's quicker to point a finger about, saying something negative about the person. Instead of doing that, we should transition to building that person up. Hey, did you ever think about trying to do it this way? I think we eat each other alive by doing that, and that does not build a good team. It doesn't form good teamwork, and then the next time this person is asked to do this, they shy away and don't want to do it because they had a very bad experience. Because I'll use myself, because two went off on them for whatever reason, and that's just no way for us to build a great culture.
No, that's definitely there. And you know, it could be looked at as those who do that are probably the ones maybe that can't do it themselves. So they instead of keeping that limelight on them, they're like, oh, look, we have another individual here. Let's just kind of put everything back, you know, on that other person.
I agree with that 100%. And it's just, we need to break that in the fire service. And by no means am I saying is every fire department doing that, because I know they're not. But I know some are. And if it's just one that's doing it, we shouldn't be doing that. Just my opinion.
No, definitely. The extrication, the
Yes,
love of
sir.
extrication, the art of extrication, where did that passion come from? Because, you know, everyone in the fire service that I've talked to has a niche. They have something that they love to do. So where did extrication come from for you?
Once again, I started so young in the fire service, but it was one day I was around a lot. I've always done lawn care stuff, so I was around a lot. Well, obviously I don't mean I always done lawn care stuff, but I was around a lot. I was able to be on a lot of calls, and man, I was there fighting fire, stretching lines through the doors, and doing this fire stuff. A lot of people don't realize that, yes, I used to stretch lines, a lot of lines, because we used to burn a lot. And it shows today because of my body. I just was, I was never really comfortable with the extrication side of it. And then one day I just like, hey, the only way that you're gonna be good at this is to start learning about it. And man, and when I started it, I wanted to be a sponge about everything, but it just kept coming and coming and coming. And then I wanted to finally, years back, I decided I wanted to start obviously Premier Extrication. I actually started out with Premier Rescue Concepts, and change the name over, but it started, and I never knew where it would grow or what it would do, but it has went way past anything that I ever expected. And I said something earlier, I tried to get on with different organizations and never did, and one day I finally just let go of it. I finally listened to the good Lord, and almost immediately Bill Simmons with Harsh Jaws of Life, he contacted me. He was a general manager then, and asked me if I would be interested in coming on board with them as an independent salesperson. This was right around the time hydraulics was first coming out, and man, I knew before I hung up the phone I was going to accept that opportunity. And And things were growing before that. And like I said, I quit trying with the fire departments, and that job almost came open immediately, or came to me immediately. And man, I hadn't looked back, and we have built a very solid team with everybody that teaches with us. We've had some trials and errors with different folks, but I think that, well, I know the team that we have now is very solid, and it wouldn't be what it is today without our team that we have. I know that people see me as a face of Premier Extrication, but man, there's a lot of us that have built this thing up, and I'll always give credit to those folks, because they have helped our organization get to where it is today, and it's still growing. And we've been asked to go across the world, but I'm not going to go but so far to teach. That's why we put so much on social media, and we've been as far as Pennsylvania and some other states we've been in to teach. But it's just something that it's taking the puzzle apart instead of putting it together. It's taking the puzzle apart, because if we don't do anything, that patient isn't coming out there. And by no means do I don't t anybody in the fire service take this wrong, but if we never spray water, the house eventually will burn out of fuel. But if we don't do anything to free that patient, he or she is never going to get free without us going in there doing things. And there's so many different tactics out here. I'll let you go with the next question, because I feel like I'm going too long.
No, keep going, keep going.
I feel like from a tactic standpoint, like I said, I've been in this business for 35 years. I don't know it all, and I never will know it all. I will share anything that I've been able to add to my little memory box or toolbox, whatever you want to call it. Vehicle technology has changed so much. Sometimes when you post stuff on social media, of course, the keyboard warriors, they're going to always have their thing to say, and that's not why I put it there. I mean, I don't mind discussion. It makes us all better. But we don't have to bash something. We see one piece of the puzzle, and then it's immediately, oh, well, you could have done it this way. Well, you could have done it that way. Guys, when we post something, it's only showing one option. If you don't like the option, don't use it. When we're in class teaching, we call it the buffet. When I go to the buffet to eat, I don't add everything on my plate. I pick and choose what I want to put on my plate. It's no different with what you see on social media. If you see something you don't like, don't add it to your plate. You don't have to eat it. Just move on from it. But there's so many different techniques out here that you can free a patient. Just free the patient safe and as fast as possible. A lot of people look at how fast I can get somebody out. Well, I want to make sure I don't further injure my patient. I get it when, or we get it when a vehicle's on fire, a patient just taking his or her last breath. We got to go. We got to go, because so we need to start doing CPR, or medic says to, we got to go with this patient fast. I get that part of it. But we're so quick. We see one little image, one little video. Oh man, why did they do this? They could have done this way or done that way. Once again, it's just one piece of the puzzle. That's all it is. So, but they're never going to stop me from posting. They will never win that battle, because I'm going to post, and I'm going to post, and I'm going to post.
Now that we're on this topic, though, I have a couple questions I want to ask you.
Yes, sir.
Because not saying that I've had quarrels, but I like to have discussions with people, and so what is the definition of an extrication, or I'm sorry, of an entrapment, and what is the definition of a pin-in? Because I feel like those words, it's just like saying fully involved. Those words get misconstrued a lot when it comes to motor vehicle accidents.
It there is Technically, yes, there is a difference. We all understand, well, some understand that, some don't. It doesn't matter to me, and I will answer your question, but it doesn't matter to me which one it is. As long as I get to get there and use some tools, I'm good. And I know that sounds bad, but I'm being honest with you.
Right.
But yes, you know, a pen job is something physically has that patient. They are being held in place by the dash, steering column, vehicles on top of them, or whatever it may be. Door may be jammed, to remove the door, open the door, whatever it may be. Whatever it may be from that side, of it. So, but yes, there is technically a difference, but I'm not one of those that's going to make a lot of, you know, is it a pin job or is it an entrap?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. But I just wanted to hear from an SME regarding extrication.
Yeah.
To me, a pin in has always been the vehicle is physically holding the
Holding them.
person
Yeah,
in.
correct.
Okay. All right. And an entrapment is I can move. I'm trying this doorknob and it won't open.
Correct. Correct. In my definition, yes, I'm right there with you.
Okay. Now with that, to me, it's kind of astounding that you mentioned, like, usually talking to guests about why they love certain things, it's all because, you know, I've tried this and I've always just loved the art of throwing ladders or stretching hose. But you mentioned earlier that that was extrication was a weak point for you, and you've turned that weak point into definitely a strong point now.
Oh, definitely it was. I mean, it was. I was horrible, and I by no means am I the greatest or anything, but I was horrible. But I, and no different than stretching lines. I didn't know how to stretch lines, but made myself better. The more fires you run, the better you get at it. That's just period. we can do those reps all day long. It's great to stretch a line down a. Down an empty hall or out in the open, but when we got junk falling all around us because it's falling out of the ceiling, whatever it may be, it's different stretching a line than stretching on the asphalt out here. But I was very weak on that side of the vehicle extrication. But once again, my job, but even before the jobs I got, I continued to get better and better at it, and I'm always going to be humble just because I get up on scene. I'm not coming. I hardly ever. I don't know the last time I've taken a tool from anybody because that's not what you should be doing. You let people learn. Obviously, if it's go time and we're not getting it done, somebody's got to step in. But coach people through when you have those pin in. Don't just come up. Hey, I'm here now. Let me have the tool. They've got to learn somehow how you're not going to always be there, and I'm gone more than I'm home anyway. But seeing where I started in 1990 to where I am today, I'm not still trying to use those same 1990 techniques on some of the newer vehicles, and I'm not going to get in a old school versus new school. Both of them still have their success out here. But there's some things that we've got to adapt to from the car manufacturers because they've made vehicles so strong now, and I have seen some of the or I've tried some techniques that have not been so successful. And you know, one of the big thing is this no relief dash lift. Well, man, I've probably been doing a no relief dash lift for 15 years. There's nothing new about it. And we've probably been doing it longer than that, maybe even 20 years. I don't know. It's been a long time that I've personally been doing that, and a lot of times that gets a bad name in the salvage yard because most of the vehicles that a lot of people train on, they're not damaged, and they try to do the no relief with too small of a spreader. Well, what you got to con what you're not taking in con what people are not taking in consideration is you don't have the compression with the dash going down or the dash is pushed down where it's physically holding a patient because the vehicle is not damaged. So you go in there into the salvage yard and you try a no relief on a dash that's not pushed down. You're trying to push it from its normal position and it's failure, and the first thing they want to say, see, I told you this technique doesn't work. Well, you didn't add the actual real extrication or the compression into it. So, and people fail to look at it from that side. But once again, if you like to make traditional cuts, I don't care how you get them free. Just if that's your go-to, make that your go-to. But don't knock something because you didn't do it the right way and say it's a bad technique. That's all I'm trying to say about it.
Okay. All right. And I'm genuinely curious. So like I know there are fire classes and rope rescue and hazmat and all that. And I'm assuming that there are vehicle extrication classes you can take to become better and better and better, but how does one do that? Because as far as I'm concerned, like for me, I know Carolina Fire Days always does some sort of rescue class, and vehicle extrication is one of them. But how does one go from like the basics to start learning the advanced things, like you were just talking about, relief cuts and dash lifts? Because like obviously that's not extrication is not my wheelhouse. But
Yes, sir.
if somebody wants to get better at that, how do they start obtaining that knowledge?
Well, I think one of the things you want to make sure that you are learning from people that know what they're doing, and that's number one, whether it's stretching a line, venting a roof, search. Talk to people that you know or doing that daily or whatever it may be, or used to do it, whatever it may be. And please don't anybody take that as an insult, because that's not what I'm meaning. But you want to learn from people that do it, if that makes sense. And I'm not just saying people that only go out and cut in the salvage yard. Can you become a great extricator just cutting in the salvage yard? Absolutely, you can. But we, no matter how much we damage vehicles, we can't replicate some of these high speed impacts that we go to. So, get your basic classes out of the way, and then start looking around for some classes in state, out of state. The North Carolina Extrication Schools next weekend, Southeastern. That's a great school. It should. Look around. There's a class in Virginia. I forget the name of it, but there's a bunch of different classes just all over. And you can contact me personally, and I know a bunch of different people that can get you in some good solid classes. Every technique's not a good technique. We all know that there's some stuff out here that people are just wanting to get clicks for, and just make sure you're using tactics that make sense, so to speak. And I'll leave that at that.
And so essentially, you know how like the fire service always says, vet your instructors when it comes to fire,
Correct.
a search. So I'm assuming you have to do the same with extrication.
Same thing. Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell people, you wanna, they're like, man, we want some advanced extrication class. I was like, okay. One of the questions we asked in our classes are, if I give everybody in here a nozzle, you know how to open it and close it. Of course, everybody looking at you like you're crazy. Absolutely, I know how to open and close it without even looking at it. Doesn't matter what position. And I asked the same thing. I said, how many of you know which way opens and close your rescue tool without looking at it? And then people are starting to guess, well, I don't know. That is a basic function of extrication, knowing which way your tool open and close. It seems like it's very well, it doesn't matter. If I guess the wrong way, and then I'll just go the other way. Correct. But if I've picked a load up off of a patient, I don't want to drop that load back down on my patient. So I should always know, if I'm a good rescue person, and I want to be a good rescue person, that is the basic right there, to know which way your tool opens and closes. So how advanced are you if you don't even know that, but you want an advanced class? So that's the bare minimum.
And so I like to categorize, and I believe that I am a humble person. So I'm gonna say this, because you mentioned that question and my mind started spinning. I'm thinking of the tools that we have on our truck right now, If I turn the knob to the left, I'm opening the spreader.
No.
No. See, there you go. Okay, so left. I'm because I'm visually like I'm looking at myself opening the compartment, take it out to check it to make sure the battery's on. If I go to the left, the spreader is going
Yeah,
to.
and now some tools are, if you're running what you used to run, that is you were wrong. But if you're running something different, I don't know about somebody else's tools, but
Okay,
I know
we
about.
have Hurst. So, like I said, I'm not an SME in this. That's
Yeah.
I haven't touched a, I haven't done an extrication in over 8, 9 years. Like, because my department doesn't, that's not what we do. Meaning,
Yeah, I
we have,
got you.
you
I
know what I mean?
got you.
Like,
Yeah, I understand.
we have a dedicated company. That's what they do. But we have, obviously, they're Hurst, they're battery operated. I couldn't tell you the name. I'm just being 100%
Yeah,
transparent.
and yeah, and that's okay. But that, like you just said, that is not your primary job function at where you're at. So, but that's what I'm just saying. There's some people that they talk about that, but then like we need to know the bare minimum, you know?
Right.
And
Okay.
that's not a knock at anybody. It's like that makes you better. I know regardless of what position I'm in, which way I need to go with this controller, because like I said, if I'm making a delicate spread, I don't want to have a tool and I got my spreaders around somebody's leg because I'm hitting the steering column to do a push.
Right.
Well, I don't want to close my spreader and, crush their leg. So I've got to know which way it goes,
Okay. Okay. No,
or
definitely,
you know
definitely.
which way it operates it. And we talk about speed control. The tools are getting extremely fast at this day and time. So I kind of tell people like it's like a vehicle. Am I wide open every time I get it to from stoplight to stoplight? Am I wide open? I said it's the same thing with spreaders. We don't want to be spreaders, rams, cutters, whatever it may be. I don't want to be wide open all the time. We're basically doing surgery to a vehicle to get this patient out. So when a doctor's doing surgery on us, are they going wide open with their scalpels and everything to cut us open? No, they're making delicate precision cuts, no different than extrication.
Okay. All right.
I need to throttle back. I'm in my wheelhouse. I need to.
No, we're good. We're gonna stay in the wheelhouse because I have another question for you. Seeing the evolution, okay. I remember when I got on, the jaws of life was just my experience. We had a Honda generator. You take that out, you get grab the connections, you make the connections, and then it went to if you like you have knobs open close, but then all of a sudden the evolution went to the twist knob. And then now we have cord reels, and now we don't even use cord reels. We have battery powered Hurst tools.
No way.
What's next? Like, is there anything coming down the line that's even better than battery? Which I don't know if there's anything better than battery operated, but what do you feel is like the next generation of Hurst tools coming down the line for future?
I can't talk about any of
It's
that.
sworn to secrecy, huh?
Yeah, I will tell you that this is not future stuff, but nobody ever thought, I won't say nobody, to have the vision to where we are in with a battery platform now, because I will say this, when hydraulics first came out, I think there was a lot of, oh, that'll never take off. And now you look where we are from every manufacturer out here. What is their number one selling product? It is not line tools. So it was a big vision that they saw, and I tell everybody when they first came out and they told me we were coming out with that, I was like, what are we coming out with this battery powered junk for? And my mind was, I got to use the first generation, and it has only grown since then. I tell people the honest. I mean, you ask Bill Simmons if he remembers. That's exactly what I said, and now I eat those words daily.
That's crazy. The evolution. I mean, because I, like I said, I think back. I remember, I had people tell me, "Oh, don't get that liquid. Don't get the hydraulic fluid on your skin. It's bad." And I'm like, all right. So I always put on medical gloves. And now, just to see the evolution of having to carry that big ass Honda generator off the truck, to now we have tools that are battery operated. They're still heavy. Don't get me wrong, but they're
Yeah,
not
they're going to
heavy.
always be. Yeah,
Yeah, they're not
they're.
heavy as they used to be.
Yeah, and they're always going to be heavier than your traditional line tool. But if you take in consideration picking that pump up, picking your hose up, and then picking the tool up, okay, how much weight you're comparing apples to apples now? Because now that battery power tool has the motor, the battery, and all of that in one tool, where you've got all that stuff. If you got to go portable, so. And there's going to always be some diehard line guys out there, or line folks out there, and that's perfectly fine. I don't knock it. I mean, I use them daily, and I know how good they are, so I don't question. I don't have any worries about it, because I know anything man-made is going to cause problems. You have issues at some point in time, so I don't care if it's a line tool or if it's a battery tool. Something's going to break on it, so it's about how quick can we get it fixed.
And Beaver Lane has Rescue 8, I believe, which is a monstrosity of a vehicle when it comes to anything rescue. So do you guys have different complements of Hurst tools? Like, do you have line driven tools, or is everything like battery powered
We're,
on that truck?
everything is line driven with the exception of one tool. We do have a 40, obviously when the 40 battery powered spreader came out, we purchased one of those, but we still have a 40 inch line tool. It was from the transformer. When we got it, we got rid of the other arms and we put the 40 inch arms on there. But it's up top. My only time it really comes off is doing training. But it'll stay on the truck until it dies. So that's the only gas power tool that we have. Line tool that we have is that 40. But everything else is. We have four sets on the rescue. We have one set on the tower, and then we have one set on the rescue engine. Well, a little bit, not quite five sets on the rescue, so that's why I said four.
So, but definitely that apparatus was designed for rescue in mind for sure.
Was, yep, it was. That's what it was built for, and we do rope and we do vehicle extrication. And that's where we are. We're not in the trench. We just don't have the manpower to try to pull that stuff off. So you got to know what your capabilities are and stay at that. Don't try to do more than what you know you can handle. So
That's
that's
that,
why
man.
we that's why we got the other people that will hit the button like, hey, we need some mutual aid.
That's that right there. As not putting your hand in too many sandboxes, just knowing, hey, with my manpower or however my situation's laid out, this is what we need to get good at. Everything else, we can call for help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
Love that.
another, well, go ahead and I'll say
No,
that
no, no,
topic.
no. Go ahead, go ahead,
Let's,
go ahead.
I was just going to say another hot topic is, which we've been doing this, I know, for 10 plus years is, well, we've been doing it longer than that, but where we really started to move vehicles, people were still afraid to move a vehicle with the patient inside of it. And I'm talking about a control movement, but people are just so afraid. You can't move a vehicle with the patient inside of it. And we're like, well, the ambulance does it every day. Why can't I move this vehicle inch by inch? I'm trying to make a situation better for a patient. So I'm going to move this vehicle. That's just, I mean, it's not a last resort for us. It's a very first thing if that's what we need to do. And we've done it on calls and we'll do it on another call, but there are still people out there. Oh, you can't do this. Well, we're going to do what's best for the patient.
Sir. See, out of my wheelhouse, but I love hearing it. Because it's true. Like, and I'm sure those who say that, it's because they've never either done it or they've never practiced to do that maneuver in that scenario.
Most of them, that's what they were taught that when they first, and we were taught the same thing. Like I said, I'm not still doing the same thing that I did in 1990 that I'm doing in 2025. Some, yes, but there's some stuff that I have to move from because it doesn't make any sense. To me anyway, I'm not throwing stones at people about that, but if I can push a vehicle away from a jersey wall, or if I can get it away from a tree and help with that extrication, I'm going to do that. It's not, well, man, we don't know what else to do. I don't really want to move this. No, it's the first thing for us. So, and I give my buddies credit down in at the Southeastern. I met these guys a long time ago, and Jeff Burge, Jason Bell, Miss J JC, Les Baker. I hope I'm not leaving anybody out. If I am, y'all forgive me because that's just old age in mind. But man, I've been to every school that they've had there, from a student to they're starting to ask me to when they asked me to start teaching, and we had those guys to come up and do a patient vehicle movement class for us way back. And man, we hadn't looked back, and we. No, we give credit. When I learn something, I share where I learned it from. I'm not this person that's gonna figure out something or see something and not give people credit from where I learned it at. So they helped us, and we still family today, and learned a lot from those folks and passed it on, and I've given them credit for the credit's due on that movement stuff. And I was like, man, that's just we should have been doing this a long time ago. And you hear people, we show it and like, man, we could have done this on this call and that call because it's so simple. It's nothing rocket scientists. But anyway, it's just knowing your tools and know how to use them. That's all it comes down to.
And to me, the biggest thing is willingness to learn and educate yourself.
And when we do stuff, we're like, guys, you got to take it back to your chief officers and get them to buy into it. But because if a lot of the older generation, that's what we were taught, to never move a vehicle and go show them and prove to them how safe this can be, and you're moving in a controlled fashion. So once again, wasted knowledge is or unshared knowledge is wasted knowledge. So
That's a fact. Okay. All right. I always like to ask this guest this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
there's a few irons that I would like to I'd definitely like to see us get these stations built that we need to have built, and when the next chief he or she comes in, I'm not a chief that wants to see the department not to grow. I want it, I hope it grows 10 times more, and because it's you pick up where one chief left off and it continues to grow. And but the biggest thing I want to see the stations and more of our full-time staff come on board.
Okay. All right. With that being said, how would a department or organization, a cadre, however, how would they get in contact with Premier Extrication to set up classes so they could learn the newest techniques and to get more information on extrication?
I won't say the newest techniques, but
Well, you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm
I
saying.
know, I know. You hit us up on social media. My Facebook page. I can't add any more friends because I'm maxed out. But you can still communicate with me on there. Of course, you can send a message to Premier Extrication also. And then, if you're looking for me on social media, my real name is Torrance, Torrance. Z-E, last name Lee, Lee. You can look me up if you have any questions. We won't have all the answers, but we'll be definitely glad to share with anything that we have. And one of the things that our team gets to do a lot of, and once again, it's about where I work at. Because anybody, the people that don't know, I work for MES, and I'm the rescue specialist for the Carolinas, so I cover North and South Carolina. But we've built relationships with different automobile manufacturers, so we have other connections through some insurance companies and things of that nature. But we get to cut on a lot of new vehicles throughout the year. So it's a different animal watching how hard the tools have to work. Because man, any tool's going to do a good job on the clunker, but when you're actually cutting those brand new vehicles and you see your tools stall out, and that's why people ask, man, will y'all tools cut everything out here? No, because none of us have cut all the vehicles out here. We can't tell you that all our tools are cut. Well, we can tell you that, but we're going to be lying because we have not cut every vehicle out here. So I will never go to a demo or anything and say our tools will cut everything out here. But it's very humbling when you get on some new vehicles and you've worked on it for 30 minutes and you've not budged a dash yet, because that has happened to some people that we have taken to one of our locations, and they're like, I don't know what to do. It's a game changer with some of these vehicles.
Would you be able to just elaborate on which manufacturer? Just so you know, for me at least, it's more of a knowledge thing to know.
I don't really want to call it that one manufacturer, because what happens sometimes, people will go and start trying to make contacts, and it kind of drives those folks insane. I can talk with you offline, because I don't want them to say, well, we heard Toot talking about this and we want to
Gotcha.
make a ton
Understood. I get it,
of
because
the
that's the day and age we're in now. Like
That's right.
you're trying to just provide knowledge, and somebody's always going to take your words and misconstrue it. I get it.
Yeah. So, but I will talk with you offline. I mean, we talk about it in the class, and in our classes and everything. But I know a lot of people listen to this, and I just don't want to get them where. And if you notice, I've not called any manufacturer's name so far, and that's the reason. But it is very eye-opening. I mean, it was for me. There's one place that I went that I never thought that their cars were anything like that, and it's not a very expensive vehicle. And I was very humble. I was so humbled I went out and bought me one.
Damn. Okay.
So.
But that just means that car, safety wise, very reliable.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And man, you're talking $20,000, $30,000 for some of them, and what vehicles are costing at this day and time, but they are just as solid as some of the higher end vehicles, and probably stronger than some of them.
Okay. All right. Love it. Love it. Love the conversation. Toot, I appreciate you coming on, man. I would say, besides trying to think of his name right now, crap, Mr. Into the Job, because he does an extrication company on the side. You're probably
Are
like
you
the
talking about
second
Isaac?
Isaac. Yep, there we
Yeah,
go, there
yeah,
we go.
yeah.
So I know you have that knowledge of extrication. It's just, to me, I love talking to individuals, getting to figure out why they are the way they are, who they are, why did you become who you are today through your experiences, knowledge, education. I really thank you for taking the time out of your day to do this. Very humbling, very professional. Like I said, I loved how we didn't go into the weeds on things. We're like, we're going to keep it professional. We're not going to mention names, but you definitely gave me a lot to think about when it comes to like certain things I'm looking at when it comes to vehicles and where I can go and get more knowledge, and I'm sure hopefully others out there can hopefully benefit from that.
Yeah, and I appreciate you having us on. I know you've just been talking to me, but like I said, we're still one big team, so it's all of us when one of us was speaking. So the big thing is, and I said this earlier, take what you can learn off of something from social media. Don't always look at, well, you would have done it a different way. Don't always look at it that way, or just just if anything you can take positive from it, take positive from it. I mean, we do see some stuff that are like, what are they thinking? But look at the whole big picture. Once again, it's not going to stop me from posting. So, because I
Understood.
mean, we've met so many people just through what we share on social media, and I'll be honest, 90 to 95% of our interaction has been very positive. I'm not going to let that 5 or 10%, distract us from doing what we need to do. We have the ability, just like the recip saw blade test that we get to do. Just changing the speed on your recip saw by one speed level makes all the difference with what two of the blades that we have tested. And it takes a lot of time to figure that out. So we go do that and we bring it to try to share that knowledge. And this is nothing about us trying to be better than anybody. It's we get this opportunity because everybody don't get to cut on brand new 2024s and 2025 vehicles. And we get to do that and we try to get as much information as we can so we can share it. So and we're going to continue to do that as long as the good Lord lets us do that.
All right. I love it. Love it. Too, like I said, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for accepting the invite. Thank you for coming on and dropping some nuggets, some gems, and sharing the knowledge.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on, boss. I greatly appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.